Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk just a little bit about controlling spray drift. But if you've got any questions about anything going on your farm, you can give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You could also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on X, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so with controlling spray drift, I just want to start the show today saying we consider spray drift and volatility as two separate things. And so here's what I mean by each. What volatility is if you spray something, let's say it's dicamba, you get it onto the plant. So it's hit its target. That's great. But the problem is it can go up in the air. It can vaporize, go up in the air, and then move off-site. That's volatility. The only products that we will typically talk about with volatility are dicamba and the old 2,4-D. Not the new 2,4-D, Freelex or Enlist One, but the old 2,4-D. And that's the reason why we would encourage you don't use old 2,4-D anymore. Just moves all over the place. With dicamba, even the new formulations that have come out with dicamba, there is still volatility concern. So we have to worry about any dicamba product that it could land on target, but eventually it could move off. Now, usually that moving off thing happens within a day or two. So once you get past, especially the first 24 hours, you're usually pretty safe. Past 48 or definitely 72 hours, should be good to go. With spray drift, what we mean by that is the wind is moving your spray. That's spray drift. Now, hopefully, it's staying in your field. We'll talk about that today. If it's getting off target onto someone else's field, that could be a real problem, and that's something you'll absolutely want to avoid. All right, we've gotten a lot of questions in the Ag PhD mailbag, so let's get to that right now.
Tiling question to start. This comes from Larry. He said, we've installed tile on about 500 acres. We've had great results getting in the field faster.
Great.
Our tile is at about 30 inches deep, and it's based, and then it slopes from there. We get about 60 inches of rain where we farm.
Ooh, wow.
I'm wondering, is there any advantage of laying the tile deeper
yes.
than the 30 inches we're at?
Yes.
And any advice you have?
Now, I'm not going to say you need to do that or anything like that, but the deeper you put the tile, it's going to do two things for you. Number one, it's going to lower the water table more. I like being at about 3 foot in depth. That's kind of where we're at on our farm, 30 inches maybe and a little bit, but 3 feet. As opposed to, there are a lot of people we've worked with over the years in Minnesota that are at 4 feet deep. So they're an extra foot deep. So their water table, when the tile quits running in the spring, usually, or early summer, their water table's at 4 foot, mine's at 3 feet. I like it a little more shallow because we're pretty dry here. We only get 20 to 24 inches of annual precip, not 60 inches. So in some of the areas where they get 60 inches, they may go 4 feet or even 5 feet deep, because now they've got the water table down further, meaning they can get more big rains without that water table coming way up into the root zone. The other reason why you would consider going deeper, and again, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. That's totally up to you what you choose to do. But if you go way back 100 years ago, you'll find that a lot of the tie lines that were put in by hand, think about 100 plus years ago, what did they have excess of? It sure wasn't money. It was labor. So they would dig deeper so then they could spend less on tile lines because the deeper you go, the farther away that will pull water from. So they could have fewer lines in the field the deeper they went. So I'm going to argue that's not the best way to do it agronomically. But again, you do what you got to do when you have no money. And that's what they had 100 years ago.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got 6 soil tests here and some water sample reports too. We may not get through all this today, but or in this first segment here, but this is from Lucas down in Texas. He said, we have high calcium, high exchange capacity soils. I've been using K-Mag and been using elemental sulfur to try to offset things here. We're broadcasting 500 pounds of K-Mag per year. Recommendations came back, obviously, with putting a bunch more on. And my thoughts are we need to apply.
Wait, with the, putting a bunch more what on?
K-Mag and sulfur.
Okay.
My thoughts are we need to apply elemental sulfur and sulfate to help flush out calcium. We don't have any drain tile yet. We're raising irrigated turf grass, but we have been using a soil conditioner, a ripper aerator to try to break through compaction and improve drainage over the last couple of years. Now, I'm not sure we're applying enough sulfur to flush out the calcium. Also, how much calcium is being put back into the soil via our irrigation.
Oh,
well, it looks like you're working with
this is a lot of questions.
Yeah, it looks like you're working with a soil consultant that we know and like down in Texas. That's a good thing. I think Lauren's pretty sharp on that kind of stuff. So I think the recommendations made sense to me just looking at what they recommend on those soil tests. But yeah, you're right. You got to take into account your irrigation water and what that test shows and what that's got. And I just personally like, especially if you get heavy soil, I really like drain tile for being able to flush things out.
Yeah, we're just real worried because when you're talking 30-plus cation exchange capacity, it's legit 30. There is a lot of calcium there. We want to make sure that we have that good drainage. I don't know what more to say than that because we can't flush excesses out without the good drainage. So that would be one of our concerns. And yes, when you're down at 2% base saturation K, we're always going to be talking about continuing to add more potassium. But the biggest thing is if we can flush away some of that excess calcium, that would be great. Also, they have recommendations for you on almost every micronutrient, iron, manganese, copper, zinc. So a lot of people get concerned about, well, boy, they want me to spend money on this and that and everything else. Where do I prioritize? Well, here's usually how we prioritize it. You have to figure this out for your own farm. But it's tile number one. It's NPK number two. It's micronutrients three. And then we focus more on getting rid of the excesses like the excess calcium you've got.
All right, thanks for those questions. We appreciate it. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show. If you have an agronomic question, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about controlling spray drift. And yes, as sprayers hit the fields all across the country and all across North America, we want to make sure we're doing a great job keeping that spray where we want it to be so it can be super effective on what you're trying to do with it. So we'll talk about that on today's program. Also, take your calls and agronomic questions at 844 44 Ag PhD.
All right, so first on the show, we got Alex Caldwell with us with Case IH. Alex, how are you doing today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on today.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. All right, so we're talking about drift today. This is a big issue. How should farmers go about deciding whether or not it's a good time to be out in the field with all that weather that always seems to be against us?
Well, the first place we send you with any sort of application, right, is to the label of the chemicals that you're spraying in that given tank solution for the day. It's the first point of knowing what's needed to make sure that application is efficient and it's doing what you're wanting to be doing. And the biggest thing that I would also remind folks as we talk about dealing with this crazy weather, your weather conditions can change throughout the day, meaning it could have been good to go first thing in the morning or it's not fit first thing, and you can revisit that decision throughout the day based on the conditions as they change as they come through.
All right, so when we start talking about spray drift, I really want to get to the technology side with Case IH. What do you recommend a farmer do? What technology is there to help reduce drift and improve accuracy?
Yeah, so once you've made the decision to jump in the cab and spray for the day, the three main factors that the machine can help you optimize is the speed with which you spray, the height at which we're applying, which we at Case IH would use our AutoBoom XRT, our boom leveling system, to make sure you're locked in at that height. And then the big thing to controlling drift potential is maintaining that consistent droplet size for the application of what you're doing. PWM solutions are great like that, and we're super proud of ours at Case IH being that AIM Command Flex 2 system.
Yeah, so explain that just a little bit and that AIM command with the pulsing and everything, because it's pretty unique.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody kind of remembers the old school rate controller where it would finally lock in a rate for us across the speed range.
Yep.
But it would ramp your pressure up and down based on the speed you were going, meaning that pressure drop across the orifice, which is our tip size, right, is causing a change in our droplet size. What any pulsing system really lets you do is lock in that pressure drop across that orifice, across the given speed range. So you tell it a rate and a pressure output you want, the system will throw back a speed range that you can operate within, and it'll guarantee that quality of application across that speed range. And we've got one of the most accurate systems on the market with AIM Command Flex 2.
All right, so outside of the technology, what else do you suggest a farmer does to improve accuracy with the sprayer and reduce drift?
So something we're especially proud of with that AIM system, tip sizing is critical in controlling that drift potential and making sure we're still getting that done for the day. So tip technology and things like that are really what make or break these decisions and these applications out in the field. What's great about the AIM system is you can use the field computer in the cab as a reverse kind of tip calculator. So you can get a given tip series that you're looking at, be inputting that tip size, the rate and pressure that you'd need out of that tip, and really be able to dial in the speed that you're traveling through the field throughout the day. And that tip technology is advancing every single year, so it's good to keep a finger on the pulse of what's out there for you.
Yeah, and it's important to have a number of different spray nozzles available because there are different requirements and different things you want to do. So, for example, if you're spraying dicamba, you might need ultra coarse, and then if you're spraying just a fungicide, you want something on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. All right, so, Alex, if people want to learn more about what you're doing at Case IH, where can they go?
I'd send you straight to caseih.com, or please reach out to your nearest dealer, and they'd be happy to walk you through these steps.
All right, again, that's Alex Caldwell with Case IH. Alex, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much. Take care.
You too.
Next up, got Nate Jansen with us with C&B Equipment to talk a little about spray drift management. How you doing, Nate?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, except it's blowing like crazy outside. Obviously, today, I don't care what you do, you're not going to stop spray drift if you're trying to spray today. But most days, you know, we have a little bit of air movement. And actually, with a lot of the products, they say you're better off having just a little bit of air movement to avoid those air inversions. But of course, as you get more towards 10 miles an hour or beyond even, we're really concerned about where those spray drops are going to end up. So what are some steps we need to take to make sure we keep things on target?
Yep, absolutely. It's just like a lot of the guests are talking, there's some main fundamentals with the sprayer. We need to make sure we cover, you know, boom height, making sure we're not drifting too far up in the air, or if we're driving through draws and terraces and things like that, that your booms aren't climbing too far up into the air. Other thing when we talk is a lot about nozzle selection, obviously pairing a nozzle size for the speed, the pressure range that you want, and the rate you're applying. And one thing that sometimes gets forgotten about in that is also looking at the fan pattern width and making sure you get the proper overlap side to side. You know, if you're a 15-inch sprayer, 20-inch sprayer, 10-inch, making sure that your boom height doesn't impact that as well, along with a bunch of other variables.
One question that we've got a lot recently, Nate, has been about the See and Spray type technology, and just thinking, will this be a huge improvement for us in just even the potential for spray drift management? And what do you think about that? Is that one of the benefits we're going to see from that technology?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things coming down the pipe, and just like any other technology, it will continue to get refined over time. Essentially, where we're at today, there's with John Deere, there's three different levels of See and Spray technology. There's a select version, which is primarily used for fallow ground, and it's a more base level technology. It's not upgradable, but it does really well, you know, on any summer fallow type application, pre-emerge, things like that. Then there's two other ones that operate more in a kind of a green on green weed detection. There's See and Spray Premium, which is essentially upgrading a current machine or doing a single tank application. So you're essentially just going out with the ability to spot spray. And then there's See and Spray Ultimate, which is a dual product solution, which allows you to broadcast and spot spray at the same time. Both of those solutions, when we're applying in post-emerge applications, we're seeing reductions of chemical usage, usually a minimum of 45% up to 75% and more in some cases. And nozzle selection is really still very important with those applications. But the speed at which we're able to determine weed from crop and apply, and also let the operator determine what size of area they want to apply when a weed is detected, is super critical. And we're seeing really good results with it so far, even detecting weeds down to a quarter inch by a quarter inch, while traveling up to 15 miles per hour.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And you know, I will say this too, a lot of guys talk about the speed that sprayer can operate, certainly a critical thing, but as we ramp up speed, that does create some more issues typically with spray drift, kind of like the boom height thing. There are a few things we can control. It's just, man, I like keeping my boom up a little bit because I can just roll and I don't have to worry about things. And so I get it. Some of these things we're going to have to take a step back in maybe the speed of operation just to make sure we're doing the quality job that we want. Talking with Nate Jansen here with C&B Equipment about controlling spray drift. And Nate, a lot of stuff going on this summer. I know you guys have lots of trials out, obviously lots of equipment out there. It's kind of fun to hear about it and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Likewise, really appreciate it.
Talking about controlling spray drift, and there are certainly some things that you can control when it comes to what you're putting in the tank, the nozzles, the boom height, just a number of different aspects here that we'll focus on. But maybe you're thinking, you know what, I'm not so concerned about spray drift today. I got a different agronomic question. No problem. We would love to help. You can always email us, radio@agphd.com, or give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and SDS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car, steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
From machine storage buildings and farm shops to dependable buildings to house your livestock, regardless of building size or use, Morton has a building for every budget. To learn how we can help you expand your farm operation, visit MortonBuildings.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our topic today is one that a lot of us just wish never, ever happened, that there could be a spray drift issue. So we're talking about controlling that spray drift, and there are a lot of proactive things that we can do to manage that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Erdal Ozcan with us right now with Ohio State University. How are you doing, Erdal?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Is this Brian or Darren?
You're talking to Darren right now, but Brian's ready to jump in here too with questions for you. And you think about the research that goes into this and also the training for farmers too with some of the new techniques. It's pretty interesting. A lot of guys have different equipment, different size farms, different ways of doing things. It's not super simple.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Drift is really one of the most troubling issues for our crop producers. And in let me give you an example. In Ohio Department of Agriculture gets called from time to time, and they say, "Well, I have a some sort of a drift damage or something else, but could you come and check it out?" And about 75% of all the non-compliance cases that our Department of Ag investigates, they are related to spray drift. So it is happening. But as you mentioned, there are ways that can be avoided and not very costly repair items that we are talking about. Even some common sense things that we can do, we can help reduce the drift.
Yeah, what are some of the easy things that you would say, okay, here's a couple of things that, farmers could change really simply, wouldn't cost a ton of money to do, and it'd really improve keeping that spray where we want it to be?
Yeah. When I go out to different locations in Ohio to give some talks on reducing spray drift, I give my producers five simple ways to reduce drift. And I can give you those five quickly if you want, but sure. There are more than five. But mine is just basically keep your nozzles as close to the target as possible while still producing a uniform distribution of the spray on the target. So you have to pay attention to the nozzle spacing and things like that. You don't want to have the boom too slow, but at the same time, not too high. That's a very simple thing that you can do. And the number two, when they change nozzles from time to time, the nozzles get bad or worn out, they have to change the nozzles. And they should look into what's available in the market in terms of the nozzle types that really eliminates those extremely small droplets. We have some of the wonderful nozzles today compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago. They're called low drift nozzles, and they basically same size, same type and everything, but you're reducing your drift potential by anywhere up to 50, 60, 70% by just getting one of these new nozzles. And the number three I mentioned is if some of the equipment related things that they can do don't help the situation, somehow they need an additional arsenal in their hands, probably using some drift reduction chemicals that are in the market. They're usually some sort of a polymer items, and they tend to increase the viscosity and density of the spray mixture, which leads to larger droplets. Again, they eliminate the smaller droplets, and the farmers can do their job without those extremely small droplets. Those small droplets don't go anywhere anyway. They disappear, they evaporate, they're susceptible to any type of wind in the field. So there's no sense of using spending your money in producing those small droplets. They are not going to help you. Number four, I mentioned them. Really, if there's any doubt about a spraying job that might result in drift, just wait until there is no longer that element of doubt. Pay attention to wind direction and magnitude. And the best investment that really people can make, producers, just go out and buy one of those wind meters. So if you don't know what the wind speed is, you will keep spraying. And the number five really is something that they related to equipment, but the timing of the application early in the day or very late in the evening, there is this thing called inversion. The droplets normally they go from ground up in under normal weather conditions, but when the ground is cold and then there is a kind of a warm air, blanket of air, the droplets cannot penetrate in that barrier, and then just stay with the wind. In the application zone, they just move miles and miles away. So these are really the five things that I will tell them. Again, there was no expensive item in my recommendations, as you can see.
No, and three of them are absolutely free. Time of day, just waiting if the weather isn't right, and controlling that boom and nozzle height. I mean, those things don't cost you a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, great tips there. And unfortunately, you've developed a lot of those because you've looked at a lot of problems and kind of studied that and seen, oh, man, where are we missing the mark here? But appreciate those five things as we get into spray season here. Keep your boom height right, choose the right types of nozzles, consider a drift retardant agent, just wait if it's too windy, and then don't spray right at the start of the morning or the end of the evening for fear of air inversions. Erdal Uskan right now with Ohio State University. Thank you so much, Erdal. Really appreciate having you on.
You're welcome, Darren. I watch you guys on the video, YouTube, all the time. I'm so happy that I was able to contribute to your program in a small way.
Well, thank you so much. We'll have to have you back on sometime.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You bet. Got Eric Prestko with us down at University of Georgia. And, Eric, I'm betting a lot of those same tips work in Georgia as well as they do in Ohio.
They do. He kind of stole a lot of my thunder. So,
I was worried about that. I'm like, oh, man, he's going in great detail here, and he's right on the money here too. And, you know, for me, I think one of the ones that I see getting violated a lot is that nozzle height or boom height, that guys keep it up too high, and we've been guilty of that on our own farm at times.
Yeah, we see that. That's a problem for us because we have a lot of terraces, and when the ground's, you know, we can tell somebody to, hey, you got to lower your boom, you know, 20, if you can get it to 24 inches above the target, that would be great. But that could be too low in some fields where, you know, you might run into a terrace or rip the end of the boom off. So it's got to be at a height that's practical in the real world situation. You know, of course, lower is better, but you got to be realistic too, because of you got land terrain issues that we have to deal with. So we've got to watch that. But that's probably one of the biggest things I see is the boom height. And the other is the speed of the tractor. That can also influence how much off-target movement we get. We tend to want to drive a little faster to get done. I was visiting with a grower the other day. He's got 6,000 acres of corn. You can't spray it all in one day, right? So you got to get it done. And so you try to go as fast as you can, and sometimes that's not a good combination if the wind's a little up. You know, one of the things he didn't mention, and you know, if I had another career, I would have been in the military. And they always talk about situational awareness, right? And that's knowing what the wind speed is, knowing what direction that it's in, and knowing what sensitive crops are nearby. And, you know, that's probably the most important thing that you need to think about whenever you get in the tractor is how windy is it, where's it blowing, and what's around me that could be potentially affected.
Yep. Again, here's something that costs $0. Just takes a little bit of time and a couple of phone
calls.
Right.
Most of these things don't cost. You have a, you know, when you think about it, you guys are farmers. You don't have a control over a lot of things, but you can control how fast you drive, how high is your boom. You can control your droplet size. You can decide to spray or not spray, and you can use a drift retardant. That's all your choice. One thing about drift retardants, I'd like everybody to realize.
Hey, Eric, hang on for just 1 second. We're up against a commercial break, but if you can hold on, we'd love to hear just a little bit more about that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The weather, the market, the soil. Corn farmers know some things are inconsistent, except for Valtima fungicide from BASF. It consistently out-yields other fungicides on average by 7 bushels per acre, consistently wins in on-farm head-to-head comparisons, and consistently makes for happy farmers. Valtima Fungicide. Visit RevXFields.com for full results. Always read and follow label directions. Yield data based on summary of 2019 through 2022 RevX field scale demonstration trials.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Make every season green with John Deere from C&B. Our compact utility tractors are an unbeatable combination when it comes to durability, reliability, and affordability. Visit your local C&B or DeereEquipment.com.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Invita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Spot less. Introducing the cleanup for tar spot, gray leaf spot, southern rust, and more. Novel next generation Adastrio fungicide broadens your spectrum and strengthens your residual when it comes to foliar disease control in corn. Visit your FMC retailer or adastrio.ag.fmc.com to clean up this season. Follow 2EE for tar spot management in corn. Valid until 1/31/28. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about controlling spray drift. And one of the things that we get a lot of questions about is the drift retardant agent classification. Okay, talk to us about these drift retardants. What are the watchouts there? What are the pros and cons? We got Eric Prosco on with us right now at the University of Georgia, and just before the break, he just started getting into that. Eric, tell us about these drift retardant agents.
So one of the things I would like to get across to folks as they're listening about the drift retardant agents is, yes, they do reduce the number of the driftable fines, but they've got to be used as part of an entire drift management program. Often I hear a lot of times if I go look at a drift complaint, well, I had a drift retardant in there, and I'm like, yeah, that's a great, I'm glad that you did, but that doesn't mean it's going to make you immune to drift when you've got other things going on, like maybe a little higher wind or you're driving faster, your boom height's too high. So I think we need to have them, but it needs to be part of a drift management program, not just to say, I'm going to use a drift retardant and that's all I'm going to do and I'm going to be fine, because that's not a good approach to drift management.
Yeah, very few silver bullets out there in agriculture at all.
Yep. And then if I make one other comment, the other speaker before me talked about droplet size, and that's, you know, as we've gotten into the dicamba and 2,4-D crop era, that's become a very common point of discussion. So what I tell, and those droplets can be, depending on the herbicides that you're applying, they may be a little larger than we need for, say, something like Paraquat or Liberty, right? So I always encourage growers to have at least two different types of nozzles on their boom. One that will give you a coarse droplet, and that's somewhere between 326 to 400 microns, and then another one that will give you the droplets that you need for the dicamba and the List technology. And the coarse droplet I like because I've found over the years that it gives me a good balance between coverage and drift protection. And that can be used for most herbicides other than the 2,4-Ds and dicambas that we're really concerned about the off-target movement with.
Hey, you brought up Liberty, and if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you about that one, because with Liberty, they talk a lot about, well, maybe they want more of a medium-sized droplet instead of a large droplet, and they want more gallons of water, and there's just a few different things there. But one thing that we never hear about with Liberty is, well, I had a big drift issue with Liberty. It doesn't seem like that one has near the issue as some of these other products.
Yeah, it doesn't, and that's interesting, and it may be that the way crops respond to that particular material. But to be honest, you know, anything can, I think, drift under the right conditions. You can have movement of any pesticide. It's just you compare Liberty to, say, dicamba or something, and it's very obvious, where maybe with Liberty it might not be so obvious depending upon how far away the drift event occurred. But, you know, still doing everything we can. You know, for us in South Georgia, you know, we don't like to spray Liberty early in the morning. We want it to be, we want to have full sun. We want to have more water. And, you know, again, I still spray in with a coarse droplet, and I think it works fine. But time of day can be very important in terms of the efficacy of Liberty. So that's something we talk about a lot here when we're visiting with growers.
Yeah, a lot of things that we can control. Obviously, we can't control the weather, but we can certainly control how we respond to it and how we set the sprayer up, how we set the spray size up of the droplets that we're talking about. And I agree with you, having multiple nozzles to choose from is just an absolute must.
Yeah, and it's easier now if you look at all the sprayers, right? You can get the multi-nozzle bodies on there, and it's very easy to have at least two nozzle types on there, and all you got to do is turn them, and you can keep rolling.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking to Eric Prosko down at University of Georgia. I know you guys are rolling. Your crop's way ahead of ours already, but we're going to try and catch up to you as fast as we can, Eric. We'll have a crop here eventually. Well, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, great to visit with you all again.
You bet. Our tech and spray drift, and we'll continue that discussion, but we're also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. And Brian, one thing too, whenever we talk about this, and I know we get into the speed of the tractor, that's one I get a little sensitive about, because I know if we get going faster, we've got more chance for off-target movement, less chance for getting great coverage on the weeds we're trying to get. I just look at filling the sprayer faster. I kind of think of it like the NASCAR pit crew a little bit, maybe not quite as fast as those guys, but they can't really change. I mean, they're already going as fast as they can go on the track. But how do you speed up the operation? If you could fill that sprayer faster and accurately, that's a good thing. So we've seen a lot of guys go to 3-inch lines instead of 2 and upgrading their pumps to fill the sprayer and carrying more water with them so they don't have to drive back home to get water. Those kinds of things, they all make a big difference.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously it all depends on how big your operation is. But if you were farming several thousand acres, and especially if you farm fields that aren't right next to each other, yeah, you're 100% right. That could be a really big deal. And I don't know. I like thinking of crazy things from time to time. Why couldn't it be as fast as the NASCAR thing? Why couldn't you come up with some kind of idea so you could fill right away? Or maybe it's filling on the go. Nobody's ever talked about that. I've never seen anything like that. Sounds a little dangerous and sketchy to me, but I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe there are other ways, other things we should be thinking about, because I agree with you. If you can refill faster, well, now you have more time to be out there in the sprayer. But yeah, just to kind of wrap things up in this whole drift discussion, I guess I'd just say do everything you can to be careful, because the last thing you want is an issue with one of your neighbors or even hurting your own crop. We've done that before. We've hurt our own crop way more than we've ever damaged a neighbor's crop. So, and a lot of times it's just because we're in a hurry. We're in a rush and either not thinking or, oh, well, we got to get this job done. Well, getting the job done is great, but if we cause damage to something else, whether it's our own crop or a neighbor's crop, that's not good either. So I guess I'm just going to say, please take your time, be a little bit careful. And you can also think about this, because this is one of the things I've told our own people. Okay, if you've got a big field, if you start at the far end, way away from the neighbor or way away from our other crop that's sensitive, you know, you're probably going to be okay if it's just literally wind drift, not volatility, that you're concerned about. You just have to think about how far is that going to move. So maybe you can spray half the field or 3/4 of the field and come back and finish it up. And I know nobody likes to do that, but that certainly is an option. We also have talked about, okay, well, maybe just on one side you need a different nozzle, a drift retardant, things like that. So there are ways to do it so you can get some work done today, because that's the other thing I hear from a lot of guys. Well, I got to do something. Well, yes, you just might not be able to do whole fields. All right, let's get back to our questions in the Ag PhD mailbag.
I had one more drainage question here, and Larry was asking, I've got an orchard that is poorly drained. It's pecans. The trees are planted 40 feet apart. If I put a drain tile down the middle, would the roots eventually clog that tile? And does it make a difference if I just put that tile a little bit deeper?
Yes, they're eventually going to clog it. And, well, the roots themselves aren't going to probably clog it, but they will be a place where dirt can get caught. And then eventually, yes, it will probably be rendered ineffective. But the thing is, that could be quite a while. And the deeper you go, the better chance you have for more years of life. And so this is one of the things I tell a lot of people too. Okay, well, I'm just throwing a number out. I don't know if it would be this or not, but let's say it's 10 years. Does it last 10 years? If the tile pays itself off in 5 years, well, that sounds like a 2-to-1 ROI. And maybe it's much more than that if you can keep the excesses in your soil out and you build overall soil health. Because that's another thing I think that doesn't get talked about enough. If you don't have great drainage, then your soil life starts to die off. And you might say, well, I'm in a dry area, so I'm not that worried about the water. Okay, if you're in a dry area, you probably need to spend more time worrying about the salt and those excesses. And we're trying to flush those out too, not just excess water. So if you have too much salt or too much water, that can kill a lot of the beneficial microbes, and you can't have that super healthy soil that you want.
Thanks for the question, Larry. We'll be right back taking more of your calls and questions after this.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD-Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/face.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farmer Amaranth. 4 counts of yield theft, resistance to groups 2, 4, 9.
You ain't got nothing on me, man.
We've been surveilling you. And now we've got Tough 5EC, a tank mix partner that'll make sure you and your gang of resistant weeds never see the daylight again.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belsham Crop Protection.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Taking your calls and agronomic questions right now. You can email us radio@agphd.com, or you can just give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Had this comment that came in from Uncle Mo, and we were talking about soil test earlier, and he said, don't send your sample to somebody that wants to sell you something like the local co-op or local extension office. I'm not sure if the extension office is necessarily selling, but yeah, it's one challenge in our industry is a lot of times the people running the tests are also the people trying to sell you the fertilizer, and there's a little conflict of interest there as to what gets recommended. No doubt about it. That's why we encourage everyone, learn how to read your own soil tests, and that way you can make your own recommendations or at least keep your advisors honest. And honestly, it makes the best discussion when you both understand how to read the soil test. Well, hey, what do you see on this? And here's what I see. And then you can take your farm forward easier. This one comes from PWW, who said, talking about driving faster so you don't till too deep. If you're running 8 to 10 miles an hour and a couple inches deep, a lot of times that works great to not smear the seed bed and just knock the tops off ripped ground and so forth. But it's a little bit different in the bean stubble. If you happen to be making mud balls, shallow it up. It's not worth it going deeper if you're making a mess out there. And we do hear that a lot from folks that if it's not fit, just don't be out there because you can't fix it very easily. Get this one from JG. He said, my soil is naturally high in potassium, so I don't normally have to add much potash. But much of my land is really short in magnesium in comparison. You guys talk about that ratio of potassium and magnesium. How do I make that balance work out? Potassium can move up and down as I pull crops off. Yeah, you're going to pull more potassium out, more pounds of potassium out with many of the crops that you're going to raise compared to magnesium. But yeah, you're just going to have to be adding and testing your soil on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's like anything else. If one thing goes up and down, you got to adjust. With magnesium, though, if you need more magnesium, there are a number of different sources out there, but we'd sure like to look at your soil tests. If you want to send them over, we can maybe give you our comments.
All right. Had a series of questions here come in from Uganda. This is from Antonio. He said, first of all, thank you guys for helping us achieve high yields in our fields, and thanks for your program. Hey, you are so welcome, Antonio. I'm glad you're checking it out. He said, we're in Uganda. We're raising dry beans. We've got a few issues here. We have beetles that will feed on our plants when they're flowering. And, you know, we get that here, too, in our soybeans. We get bean leaf beetles that are out there a lot during yep. that time.
But usually the pyrethroid insecticides will control them, so it's not a big deal. I don't know what it costs in your country, but here we've reached an all-time low in price. You're talking $2 an acre, roughly, for the full rate of a good pyrethroid insecticide.
He said he did watch our bean leaf beetle program, by the way, and got some good information from that. That's good, Antonio. So then two questions here. First of all, on fertility for dry beans, on your fertilizer removal app, you show what the grain is, but not the stover on dry beans. Would it be similar to soybeans or something
Probably.
Else?
Probably. We worked together with the International Plant Nutrition Institute. They got all the numbers for us on all the different crops. So if we don't have stover on a particular crop, that means they didn't have that information. So they hadn't run the studies, apparently. I don't know. If I was guessing, I would say it's probably somewhat similar to soybeans, though, on the stover end of things.
Okay, then his other question is, if he's inoculating his dry beans,
yep.
There's some debate on if he's going to need nitrogen in addition to the inoculant, or if you add nitrogen, is that going to impact your nitrogen fixing bacteria?
It doesn't have that much negative impact. A lot of people talk about how the bacteria in the soil will get lazy. Well, at a certain point, sure, but any bean crop needs a lot of nitrogen, so you'd have to put on a tremendous amount of nitrogen to see almost no nodules. And here's the thing, at the end of the day, as farmers, we're trying to make money. And I don't know in your soil, but I can tell you this, if you haven't raised that crop and had those rhizobia bacteria growing in numbers over time, the odds are pretty high you could inoculate. In fact, you could double inoculate, and you could throw nitrogen out there, and you'd still get a gain from that applied nitrogen. But the only way you're going to know is to try it. When our dad first moved to South Dakota, nobody was raising soybeans here. And he often talked about how he'd throw 100 pounds of nitrogen out there and have a 10 bushel yield gain. So that was tremendous. I mean, first first time raising beans, even maybe the second time raising soybeans. So anyway, I would at least be giving it a try.
Yeah, and do a few different, do things different ways.
Yep, try some different rates and
can do some comparing yourself. Yeah, good questions. Really appreciate it. If there's more we can do to help you, Antonio, just let us know.
And it's so hard. We're agronomists, but so we can talk about the things that are needed to raise a great crop. But at the end of the day, we're also dealing with the economy. We have to be economists to some degree as well, because we want to help farmers and help you make more money. Without knowing what your costs are for any of these products, because you're in a different country, it's a little hard for us to make the best recommendation other than to give you some ideas like we did.
All right. This one came in from Rodney. He's down in Belize. He said, I've been listening to you guys talk about gibberellic acid and silage corn and grass production. I'm wondering about that for soybeans. Here's my situation. We raised two crops of soybeans down here, one in June to September, and then one in January to April with shorter days. We've got limited soybean genetics, so we end up planting the same varieties both seasons. But the summer varieties grow 5 feet tall. The same variety in the winter only gets 2 feet tall. And worse, the beans only start 2 inches off the ground. So it's putting pods on too low to really harvest well. So the question is, besides genetics and plant population adjustments, what could I do to get the beans to stretch out a little bit more before putting on the pods? That's why I'm curious about gibberellic acid.
Yeah, we also talk a lot about nitrogen. So just nitrogen in general early in the season helps almost any crop get taller. I don't know if you're going to see a lot of difference with the gibberellic acid. It's certainly something you can try. I just think, yeah, you already mentioned the timing. That is a big deal. But the other thing that we'll talk about in addition to nitrogen is population. If you put your rows closer together, raise a higher population, you will find that the plants will absolutely get taller.
All right, we were talking about tillage, and Kevin was listening to that, and he said there are some products that can be used to make the soil more dispersed and reduce bulk density. How do those types of products work?
Say it one more time.
Well, just things you could add to the soil to break up compaction.
Go back. I'm sorry. I missed the very first part. What?
He said there's products you could add to the soil. Rather than doing tillage, you could spray something on the soil that would cause the soil to be more dispersed to break up that bulk density or compaction. How could those types of things actually work?
I know. yep. It's to get soils to, they talk about the colloidal properties and everything, basically to get soil particles to attach and then create some space there. I know I've always been skeptical of those things, but then you look at some of the golf courses and the products that they're using, and I mean, literally some of the soils are sealed off. They spray these products on, and then they get stuff to penetrate through. So I don't know the science enough behind it to tell you, well, this for sure is exactly what happens. I don't know. All I know is this. If I try something and it works, I'm happy. Okay. It's going to cost some money. So that's the negative side. And is it ultimately going to fix something for the long run? That's my other big question. It might be a short-term thing. So we look more at the long-term side of it, which is tiling, having really good calcium levels, and building soil organic matter. If I do those three things, those are usually long-term fixes.
Yeah, the other thing too, we were talking on today's program about some things that you could do that don't cost any money that could help improve production. One of those things is waiting and knowing when to be out there and when not to.
Yep.
You know, for example, on our farm today, we're planting, and there's some fields that are 100% ready for that. There are other fields that aren't,
and
we're staying out of those fields, even though, man, I really would like to get that particular field planted. Well, it's just going to have to wait, even though we're going to catch rain tonight, and we're probably going to have to wait several days.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm saying, hey, let's go, but I'm not the one that's out in the field right now. I'm obviously in the radio studio doing the radio show, so I don't know. I can't see exactly what's out there this second. Only the people in the field can. And so when you start hearing from people, well, I got to go, or you see the neighbor going, well, I got to go, do you? I'd check a little bit
first. Or you find out, hey, I've got compaction on my farm, and it doesn't have to be this bad. I'm going to change things going forward and not make that mistake again. Hey, thanks for the question. We appreciate that, Kevin. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.